Start with a cheers, shall we, boys?
Yeah, we're rolling. Cheers, boys. Good to get the whole team together. Thank you very much for coming down. And I'll introduce, welcome to the Winners Never Quit podcast, Series 5. Completely different to any series I've done so far. We're going to be focusing in on the row to raise money for Head Up. £50,000 is our target, and we're rowing from New York to Southampton. So we're going to talk all things rowing with the team. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So, boys, good to see you. Good to get the whole band back together. How are we feeling? How are we doing, Adam?
Very good. Just a forewarning, Jack and I are both full of a platter of Nando's chicken each, so our words might be slightly slurred. And these two have had more pipes than they'll probably care to mention. So
Yeah, I prefer the liquid. cheers for having me.
Yeah, no. Which is funny, before we start rolling, obviously you were like, yeah, I'm really doing you a favour. I was like, Bruce, we're meant to be a team. But this is like team exercise, and hopefully Bill Gates is going to see this and Microsoft's going to fund the row. Yeah, it would be bloody nice. Funny, mate, when I was fundraising, I don't know if anyone's parents say this to them or grandparents. My nan went to me the other day. You know what you should do? You should email that Jeff Bezos. I was like, Nan, what planet do you want? I think I have Jeff Bezos's fucking contact details. Nuts.
Very handy.
So I think we should probably start with how this row all came about and what we're doing. So, not to put anyone on the spot, but Brucey.
Myself and Nutty did this Mid-Atlantic before in this boat, Endurance, and got involved with a chap called Chris Martin, who brought the money in the boats. And we've
not the lead singer of Coldplay.
The Ocean Rowing Chris Martin.
The Ocean Rowing
Chris Martin. Confused.
And so, to cut a long story short, I guess. Me and Nutty were based out of the Middle East for a bit, and we were messing around in the Brit Club in Manama in Bahrain, convinced some Bahrainis to row across the Atlantic. They're brilliant. Yeah, they got the whole fucking expedition underwritten by someone capable of underwriting that expedition, I guess. And then, yeah, they liked the idea more than the reality without saying anything too slanderous. And then, so they left from Gran Canaria, got 3 days into their row and got picked up, called in a helicopter lift out of La Gomera Coast Guard Station. And so mine and Nutty's original boat we rowed across the ocean in Endurance was drifting for 11 months with nobody on it across the trade winds current, like the prevailing elements were behind it, yeah? And we're watching it on the satellite AIS, like tracking system, right? And then it got to, we thought it was going to make landfall in Hispaniola, which is the island of Haiti and Dominican Republic.
That famed holiday destination. I hear it's fantastic for a stag do.
It would have been slightly awkward to recover it from there.
Absolutely lawless.
Sounds
does sound good.
So anyway, it missed that, thankfully. No damage done. It made landfall on an easterly Bahamian island called Yulafera. Well, it didn't make landfall, it got picked up because the Atlantic coast, like the easterly coast of these islands, is very rocky with the full force of the Atlantic. The nice beaches are on the westerly coast where it's a bit sheltered. Mm-hmm. So this chap...
Donnie, wasn't it?
Denny,
yeah.
Captain Denny.
Captain Denny was like the big guy in town.
So luckily for us, he picked it up whilst on his fishing trip. Like professional fishermen, not like rich American tourist fishermen. So he picked this boat up and towed it into Yulafera. And then me and Jack were standing comms, just talking about how it was going and that. And he rang me up and he's like, Bruce, do you want to... So Chris Martin got quoted like 20-something thousand pounds just to get this boat from fucking Yulafera to mainland USA. That was a bit steep. We might as well just row it there. So Jack rang me up and he's like, Bruce, you jump in from here, mate.
Man. So nice, all right, mate.
Fucking all riff.
Yeah. We're on a podcast, mate. Talking.
Yeah.
Obviously, this boat had drifted across the Atlantic, which is pretty nuts. And I'll open this one to the floor. What would it? So obviously, those boys abandoned ship, got heli rescued. We'll never know exactly what happened. Only they will. But I was thinking, mate, you couldn't fucking pull me off that boat if there was no amount of money. I'm sticking with that boat to the bitter end. I don't know about you boys.
The only thing that me and Nutty can say is we can attest to the seaworthiness of Endurance.
It's got pedigree, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure has.
Yeah, the boat's not the first point of failure, is it?
Yeah, yeah, it's normally your mind like that. Right. Oh, it's fucking a bit crap. So yeah, obviously it drifted across, and then it was actually me. It wasn't me personally, but I know a guy in Florida, does boat recoveries, and I asked him. He said $27,000, and the boat is only worth what?
$27,000.
Yeah, probably a bit. Probably
write off.
Yeah, it was write off. So I was like, yeah, phone Brucey, and Brucey was game, and then phoned Adam, and he was game.
Game or gay?
Yeah, well, hey, what goes on ship, mate, you know, when you're on the North Atlantic for 45 days, that's a different beast when you're on land. So yeah, phoned the boys, and then, yeah, we picked the boat up, and that was another adventure, and we'll talk about that later. But yeah, Adam, what do you think when I phoned you and said, right, drop everything you're doing, fly to the...
Daddy's calling.
Fly to the Bahamas, what, Nassau, no, an even smaller island, and help me rescue a boat with a guy you'd never met before.
Yeah, true. I hadn't met Brucey. We just got on the one Zoom by the time we kind of all confirmed to do it. And then we met for the first time on Eleuthera, or Eleuthera, as you exotically call it, Brucey. And what we, luckily you teed me up before, hadn't you? So as it was drifting across the Atlantic, you kind of said, Adam, there might be a row across the Atlantic on for us if we can find this boat, because we knew it was somewhere in the mid-Atlantic. And then obviously you kept me in the loop with your comms with Chris and Brucey as it made its way to the Bahamas. And then as it landed and was discovered by that Disney ship, and it looked like it was on and it was unscathed for the best part. I was in Ecuador at the time doing what I do, kind of traveling, moving and chasing adventures and documenting it on YouTube and Instagram. And it made...
Chasing South American birds as well, no doubt. Well,
we don't talk about that.
Not trying to big time it or anything.
They're chasing me.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a no-brainer decision. Flew up from Ecuador. Obviously a very daunting thing, like probably the most daunting challenge that I'd taken on up to that point, even though it turned out to be an incredible adventure, fairly safe and just sunbathing in beautiful conditions, wasn't it? But we met on the island of Eleuthera, and Brucey is the most effective man I've ever met when it comes to just talking to strangers and wrangling them up to do things that he needs doing. So it was an hour
easily.
It was an hour commute from the airport on the other side of the island to the police station where the boat was being housed. Yeah. And I was panicking about, oh my God, it's a $100 taxi. And Jack was thinking the same thing. Yeah. It's a pain in the ass, like an hour journey.
And as well, this is an island. It's not like the UK. Yeah. You can't get an Uber.
Yeah.
Like we got a number for a local. And oh yeah, that's a taxi driver. And you'd message him, oh mate, could you pick our friend up at like 4 o'clock? And he'd reply, I'll see if I feel like it. And you're like, no, mate, you can't. He's landing. You need to be working.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's quite a wild place.
So, yeah, I was going to be stuck there with no lift. But obviously, when Brucey's in the team, he already wrangled an expat who, Mike is his name, isn't it?
Yeah, Mike.
And he's
Curlis,
a good friend of us now and helped us out loads when we were on the island. But then, yeah, long story short, got that lift over, met Brucey for the first time. And then it was like a dream, wasn't it, when we had to liaise with the police station and getting the boat on the water. And
mate, I was hanging out with Mike Curlis for about 2 days.
When? Where?
Before, so I was Chris, like just before you two arrived.
Yeah. Buttering him up.
And then after about 2 days, it was like
whatever you're into.
He's a pretty sound guy. I had like a lovely, like Abby, his missus, as sound as anything.
Yeah.
And then after like 2 days, he was like, oh, I didn't actually realise you telling the truth. I thought you guys are full of full of shit. And actually, there's a boat in there.
Yeah. It's quite an unbelievable story. When we rode onto various islands during that expedition as well, and popped up and people just couldn't believe the fact that, you know, the story from start to end of the fact that this boat was floating across the Atlantic, we'd flown over just to rescue it. We now find ourselves on this random island in the middle of the Bahamas. And yeah, it was really like a movie script. I'm glad we managed to document it all. And it was only the start of obviously this massive endeavor now.
Yeah.
Was Ocean Rowing something you'd thought about before you got in touch with Jack? Is it something that was on your radar?
Not at all. I didn't know it existed until Jack and I have been friends for over 2 years now. And that's kind of, I met him as he'd just finished his row. And I just was in awe over how wild that is as an expedition. Wasn't sure of like the details involved, the difficulty, but I just obviously knew that it was like an incredibly taxing feat. And I didn't even know when he was like, Adam, do you want to row the North Atlantic? I was like, yeah, it's probably the same as the Mid Atlantic, right? Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. He was like, no, it's actually going to take a bit longer and it's going to be horrible.
Yeah. it's the temperature. Man, like, mate.
Yeah.
Everyone says it's like, when I spoke to Tom Waddington, a guy who's just done it, he went Newfoundland, and he was just like, mate, it's the cold that gets you. And what did Matt Mason say? I realise we're name dropping a lot of people that probably don't have a clue. These are just people that have rode the North Atlantic.
Very, very similar sort of thing. He said he wouldn't do it again, even if someone paid him to do it. And I was like, ah,
brilliant.
That's quite something that.
Yeah. How's Mike? Mike is playing silly buggers, isn't it?
I could hold it like that.
No, yeah, the only reason I signed up for the North Atlantic is because of the promised top-off content rowing across the open ocean. And then I realised we're going to be too cold to even have our tops off, aren't we, Brucey?
Do you know what the worst thing about this whole endeavour is?
What's that, mate?
Well, my
he'll find a way.
Yeah.
Did you boys? Firstly, did you boys rode naked? Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much most of the time.
Yeah, I just varied sometimes what I was wearing on the legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just avoids getting a sore ass.
See, as a solo, you can't really row naked.
Why?
You know.
Because you can't sun cream your back. And do you remember how burnt I got when us three rode? I've showed you the picture. Yeah.
Well, I remember.
Yeah, gopping. Like,
shit, yeah.
It was like,
yeah,
I was genuinely,
yeah,
my back.
Yeah, my back was like, your back. Yeah,
mate, my back was like that. Mate, my back was honestly like a squashy, mate. It was horrific. It was the same colour as this. Like, I've never been so badly sunburned. It was so funny because obviously, was it the day? So we'd planned this training road. This is before we rode the Atlantic. We met up down the thing and you'd had a big boozing off.
Who's we? So me, you, and... Yeah. We went over to the car.
I remember saying to you, actually, because we did the first shift, I said, oh, mate, sun cream back. You went, probably be all right, mate. And stupidly, I just went, yeah, it probably will be. It fucking wasn't.
Oh, man. Really
the worst. Was that down in Hamble?
Yeah. It fucked me, it was not. All right.
You know what my favourite thing about those cars expeditions was?
The fish and chips?
Was stealing people's berths in Cars Marina.
Oh, yeah. That's funny, because
where else are you going to park it?
Well, the first row, I raised money for Brains Trust. The only reason I raised money for Brains Trust is because they let us tie alongside to their boat. I was actually going to do it for Brain Tumor Research.
Mm.
And then we got chatting to Helen, lovely woman, founder of the charity. And she was like, yeah, I have a brain tumor charity.
Chat, backtrack a second.
Yeah, go on.
You got chatting to Helen because we were messing around in the marina at Cowes. Yeah. Couldn't find anywhere to park this boat of ours. And so someone in their sailing boat said, well, you can tie alongside us if you want, if it's going to be a few hours in town and catch the tide back into that Southampton water. Yeah. And we're like, yeah, sweet. And then you got chatting to them, explained your expedition.
Yeah. Mad, isn't it? The people you meet when you're ocean rowing. So now the boat is safely in America, we think. Hopefully. Well, it was a bit of a touch and go when that hurricane hit Florida. Yeah. Exactly. I was like, fuck's sake.
But is it outdoor or indoor?
Outdoor.
It's outdoor, the way we left it.
Yeah, full of water as well.
Is it?
Nice. Which is not ideal.
The way we found it.
Yeah, life comes full circle, you know? And then this is a question I'll open to all the boys. In fact, we'll go with Adam first. So, obviously, we've rowed an ocean before. What has taken you by surprise, mate, in prepping for an ocean row, and the build-up and the logistics and the money?
I think because I've been around the world of what it takes to get a big expedition off the ground, and obviously going from employment to self-employment over the last 3 years as well, you realise that when you're trying to make things happen on your own, it's just eating shit sandwiches on end, constantly to try and get some positive traction.
Great analogy. That, sometimes life throws you a shit butty. Yeah. You just got to take a bite.
Exactly. And, there's been a lot of that from the start, but it's the 10 no's to get that one yes or whatever, or even sometimes more than 10 no's to get that one yes. But the fact that this expedition, although is like pretty unique and difficult in the fact that so many fewer people take on the North Atlantic as opposed to the Mid Atlantic, like the strength in the team of you three that have obviously 30 plus years of military experience between you, and also those three crossings of the Mid Atlantic. So you all know what it takes to get that expedition to the start line. Mm-hmm. And also I know what it takes to, when it comes to self-funding, getting things sorted, and also corporate sponsorship. So it's been a lot of ups and downs, but I think obviously we're well on track, and we knew that it was always going to be this difficult. And the beauty of the fact that, you know, we've put in the legwork to get this boat to where it is now. So we're, you know, in terms of the charter, that's most people's expedition costs, isn't it? So we're in a nice position. But it was always going to be difficult, and I was expecting that. So it's not like anything's taken me by surprise.
Roger. I know on your first crossing, you had pretty much complete electrical failure.
Yes, it did get flooded, didn't it?
No, it didn't get flooded. It initially, it got pretty wet later on, like naturally. But we didn't nothing fucking realise
nothing
that
wrong
they,
with getting wet and wild, Brucey.
Yeah.
If it's around you for long enough, it's inevitable. It's top it.
Yeah.
It did.
So the first fucking issue we had was we just had everything on. I didn't realise it's like how can I explain this to fucking people that listen to this podcast?
That's right. No,
I was about to explain.
Yeah.
Like
it's just it'll only be my mum. Yeah, it'll only be my mum. Yeah, maybe my grandma. Yeah.
I can't explain it like a radio battery.
They all turned off after the first minute. Yeah. So it's fine.
I'm just here because George sounds bad. Gave us a good rating on the podcast.
Stand by. Enough about that. So to explain it objectively, yeah, these batteries, if they get a deeply discharged, they then don't hold charge. It's going to compare it to a radio battery. It's the same thing. So when this thing
could have
stops
just said battery,
holding,
I'm pretty
this,
sure
when
most people know that.
Stops holding charge, like at midday, it would charge up and show full. We'd get the water maker working in the midday sun, and that was it. Everything else had to be turned off. Mm. So we were like 3 days into the expedition, we were potentially staring down the barrel of completely losing, potentially losing like the whole electrical system. We didn't know how it was going to develop, and immediately decided between us. Continue heading west until we run out of food or hit landfall.
Yeah,
because our beacon, if we're really getting the shit, just call it in.
Yeah,
hopefully we're close enough to the other side that someone can get to us fairly easily. But yeah. Stop it. Like Jack was saying, stopping is not something that
you just got to keep going.
Yeah, and it blows my mind the amount of people that when I say they're like, how did you keep going? Like, how did you quit? And I'm like,
if you don't do it, you'll fucking die.
That's it. Like, I'm like, there's no option. Like, there's no Coast Guard. Like, no one's coming to get you. You've got to go. And that's just because the conversation we've had.
This is one of those immortal, nutty phrases. So we often mess around with this flat water paddling, like long distance. We do this Devizes to Westminster race, which is 125 miles. And we're
canoe, kayak race, isn't it?
Kayak race.
You can do it.
We're
in a kayak in this.
Sorry, like I said, my mum's watching. Obviously, I need to explain that to her.
Most people don't know the difference.
No.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah.
What is the difference? One's got a paddle on both sides of the stick, I guess. It's a kayak. Canoe's got like a spade. Just one's.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So quickly finish this.
And we've just lost my mum.
Go.
So we were like 85 miles and I don't know, I'm not like 18, 19 hours into it. And we were racing hard, like competitively. And we were just like not speaking for a bit. And then that was sort of speaking to himself. And it was like, Brucey, sometimes you just have to keep going. And I sort of paused to realise that not he was saying something and digest what he was saying. And was, everything, this all ends one way or another. Sounds fucking grotesquely Chad, actually, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. See, it's good.
I'll probably take that one back, actually.
It's good. I like it. Sometimes you just have to keep going, or you'll brown out. And that brown out.
Yeah.
But no, that's, you know, not to keep hammering them that point, but I remember you said to me a couple of weeks ago, you were like, if we run out of complete electrics, we'll just keep heading east until we hit France or Ireland or hopefully Cornwall. Well, hopefully Southampton, because that's where we're meant to go.
Cornwall would be ideal.
Only because you live in Plymouth.
Do you know what I was thinking about the other day? I was the part when we stop in the Sillies, and then I'm going to have to row past my house.
Yeah, that's going to be horrible.
Maybe we drop you off. You just said, see you later, buddy, at the barbecue.
Fuck off.
I think whether there's record or no record, when we land on the Sillies and we're like, to be fair, if there's no record, we'll keep ploughing to Southampton.
Yeah.
But the fact that when we land on the Sillies and we're like, oh my God, we've still got so much further to do.
Miles
all of the adrenaline and motivation starts to sap away. It's going to be taxing that.
That's
a very good point.
It's going to take a hell of a man.
It's going to take gargantuan. King Arthur couldn't pull me out of that pub, mate, after 45 days on the hill.
Whoever could...
Might just be in it.
Whoever could pull Jack out of that pub and be crowned the new King Arthur.
It's probably a good time now we talk about the route. So the route we're doing is from New York to Southampton. Now, the way Guinness adjudicate world records is it's mainly... It's consonant to consonant because if you were doing town to town, everything would be a world first. You could leave from, instead of leaving from Manhattan, you could leave from New Jersey, row to, instead of rowing to Penzance, you could row to Falmouth, you know. So the record is from New York to the Scilly Isles, and it goes over your average speed over the distance you've done for that reason. So if you were to leave from Boston and go to Falmouth, if you'd row a little bit further, your average speed would have to be would be quicker. So that's how the record works. So our route is New York, Scilly Isles. Now, current record is, Adam?
43 days.
43 days. So if we are under the record, we will stop at the Scilly Isles, and we've sort of already had a chat amongst ourselves. We're saying, ditch gash, shower, meal, pint, back on the boat.
And for the civvies listening, ditch gash means gets rid of all the rubbish.
Yes. See, we probably should.
That's a fair point, actually.
We'll have to say we're running out of time on this first episode. We'll introduce ourselves in episode two.
Yeah. We've done this the wrong way around. We've just gone straight into the conversation.
Yeah. We skipped the foreplay, gone straight to it. My missus sent me a reel about foreplay the other day, and I was like, fucking hell. She said, I'm shit in bed. Must be.
She sent you a reel what?
A reel. It's Plum of Faith. And she's talking to him, and she goes, what men need to understand is foreplay is, you know, talking about your day, you know, when you're lying in bed before you get into it. It's not just spitting on your fingers and rubbing. Yeah, and I was like, oh, fuck, I've been doing it wrong for 16 minutes. anyway, sorry. Definitely lost my gran now.
Yeah.
If she was even still listening at this point.
Well, coitus.
Well, you'd be worried if she was more invested in the conversation.
So,
if there's anything like my family, they're all desperate for grandchildren. Yeah. She's probably actually quite pleased to hear that one in an obscene sort of weird way. Yeah. At least one of us is getting some action.
So that's the route. And then once we get to the Scilly Isles, we will then push on to Southampton, where the boat is stored, and where you sort of all sort of, it's like a nice central part, isn't it?
Where we'll get our heroes welcome. And the story of the boat, because obviously we jumped straight into the mid-conversation, the boat was created and birthed in Southampton. Yep. And then obviously Brucey told the story of how it was then shipped down to the Canaries so that it could be rowed across the mid-Atlantic. And if you think like the life cycle of this boat is quite incredible, because these guys actually rowed the exact same boat across the mid-Atlantic.
Worth mentioning, this boat holds the current world record for a team of four on the exact same route we're doing, isn't it? It's like St. John's or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't fucking learn something new every day. I thought the world record was like the quickest time across continent to continent. So if you did a shorter route, you get...
It's all average speed. This boat from the Canary Islands, obviously over to the Bahamas, we got it over to Miami, as you will have seen or heard. All those videos are on YouTube, by the way, if you want to get up to date.
Great plug. I was going to blog you a second ago when you said, we documented it all. And I was like, and then you just carried on talking. I was like,
We did a five-part mini-series of all that adventure, and they're probably my favorite videos I've ever made. Yeah, so
they were sick.
Check them out if you want to get up to date on everything that we're talking about.
Maybe look good. Didn't show my temper tantrum when we got to Nassau.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was funny. We'll talk about that.
We need to elaborate any further, had we, Jack?
So to clarify, obviously the full boat's going full circle now from Southampton, Canaries, across to the Caribbean, up to New York, and then back across the North Atlantic to Southampton again, which is quite a nice cathartic way to finish the journey. You know, epic.
Yeah.
And as Brucey mentioned, it's the same boat that holds the current world record, which was set around 15 years ago, I don't know exactly.
There's
two categories of ocean rowing as well, if you're new to this, which I was as well. You've got open and you've got classic ocean rowing. So this boat is a classic boat, meaning it's got just a normal shaped hull that doesn't excessively catch the wind in order to give you an added advantage of catching the wind with the trade wind current or whatever to push you closer and faster towards your destination. So we're rowing a classic boat. The classic record is 43 days. And there's also the open category, which has the bigger hulls that catch more wind that get you there faster.
Quick on this boat
category. I think it's worth noting the classic designs, I've been reliably informed that it's far more seaworthy than the open.
Yeah.
Especially when you're messing around with the...
North Atlantic.
Well, I've also been reliably informed of the horrendous conditions in the North Atlantic. I feel far more comfortable in endurance.
So the reason for that, so a classic boat will have a V-shaped keel. A keel is just the bottom of the boat, whereas an open It's predominantly rannocks as well, if you've heard of them. They're flat-bottomed, which again is great when you have the wind with you, but they don't really hold in the water as well because they just don't have the surface area below the water. And then also the difference between a classic boat and an open category boat is a classic boat, you have to be, the bow cabin, so the front cabin, will be a lot smaller and allows you to see over it a lot better. Whereas the bow cabin on an open category boat will be bigger and acts pretty much
like a sail,
and allows you a bit of wind more, you know, because we'll still get assistance from the wind.
Yeah, like a bit of a surfboard.
Really. Yeah, yeah.
Flat bottom.
Yeah, so if you've ever rowed a rannoch or an open class boat, you've not really rowed an ocean. I mean, I don't know who's done that, eh? Not me.
What do you reckon about the whole rowing solo thing, Jack? I mean, I was fascinated by the whole thing. Mm. And then I spoke with Nutty. And as far as I see it, the value I get is sharing that experience at Wild Adventure with someone. One day I'm going to row and probably just the Mid-Atlantic. Like,
yeah.
Little quickie, mate.
Yeah. Just, you know, just 2 a.m. Little quickie, mate, you know. Rowing solo. I fucking loved it. I didn't have to put up with you fucking three lunatics. Okay.
He took that one to heart. Yeah.
We had a great time at the pub, Rosa. Come on. Maybe a little bit too much fun at 5 a.m., wasn't it? Jesus, that was... Yeah. That escalated.
A lot of cider going down.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about 5 a.m. ciders. Yeah, it's good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But would I do it again? No. Because what I'm really looking forward to this time is what you just said. Mm. That shared experience of hardship, but not just hardship. Bit of bants with the boys. And that is... It's really looking forward, you know, sharing those moments when... You know, you've had maybe a rough couple of days and then you just see like a pod of dolphins or a pod of whales and you're like, fucking hell, this is Waz. Or, you know, when it's been chucking it down all day and you just get out there and you just have to laugh because otherwise you'd cry.
Yeah. For the simple fact that it's actually hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It's actually really difficult.
Yeah, and when you're on your own and you've got to, you motivate yourself, keep disciplined, you know, it's a slog, but... When you're having down days, hopefully that'll be the day Nutty goes, come on, Jack, you know, you wanted this.
Do you fancy a Rattlers?
Yeah.
I was just thinking, having someone else in the boat, even if it's just like one other person, and that's you're getting a bit fucking shit, and you're just changing over shit. Oh, the weather's shit outside, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
It's like, yeah, the weather's shit.
That's shared misery.
Yeah, shared misery.
You're all used to in the military as well.
Yeah.
It makes a world of difference.
Yeah. But then equally, you know, I wouldn't dissuade anyone from doing it solo.
Mm, I agree.
Because as well, like my mum said to me, she was desperate for me to do my first crossing as a team. Probably didn't handle it the best, you know. When I look back, probably could have said something different. And I was like, "What do you mean, mum?" She was like, "Well, what happens if a marlin strikes your boat and cuts you?" Because that does happen as well. Marlins.
Which weirdly never happened ever before.
Yeah.
But on these last couple of years, it happened like five times.
Five times, yeah.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
I don't know, mate.
It's
global warming. Illuminati confirmed.
It's the Matrix.
They're
coming after Logan Paul, Andrew Tate, and the Marlins. Anyway, so yeah. And I, this is what I probably shouldn't have said to my mum. I said, "Mum, if I'm laying asleep and the Marlin comes and strikes and hits my femoral artery, I'll be dead in minutes. It won't matter if there's anyone there because I'll bleed out."
Your poor old mother, mate.
Your mum.
No, hang on a second. Right. Oh, yeah, Jack.
Dead in minutes.
My hero.
Thanks.
My hero.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack.
Obviously, she didn't go, "Oh, cheers, babe. That, you know, that's really put my mind at ease."
Well, I actually had no idea about this until now.
So.
Now my mum's going to be worried.
Famous pictures from, this is from the Atlantic Challenge race. This is like a team of four or something. This fucking dude is on his... sleeping in the rear cabin with his legs splayed, right?
Oh, no. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately. Mate, and this fucking swordfish. There's a picture online. This fucking swordfish came up through the bottom of the boat right between his legs. No damage to him, mate. They managed to pull it out and plug the hose.
Almost.
But what? Imagine having that swordfish tusk on your mantelpiece. Yeah. Who gets to keep that? Obviously, the guy that's sleeping in the cabin when it struck.
But imagine that.
What happens to the
such
fish?
Such a cool gizzard.
Stuck.
No, it breaks off, I think.
Oh, right.
I don't know. What does happen to the fish?
Swordfish tusk.
Yeah.
Just taxidermy.
I hope I'm not going to get fact checked, but can marlins regrow? Who's that? Steve Backshaw.
Probably
Steve
not.
Backshaw, if you are the one listener that's still listening. Do marlin fins beaks grow back?
Beaks.
Is that what they're called? No.
Lance.
But there's no marlins in the North Atlantic.
Yeah.
We'll be all right.
Is that true though? I'm actually.
No.
I don't want to. I'm not doing this to lose any legs, boys.
Yeah.
Imagine, right, right?
Mate, imagine that. Imagine that. You get your cock speared off by a marlin, Phil. And on that note, I think that's enough for part one, episode one. And then, yeah.
That's nice, by the way.
We have got loads of questions that we've meant to answer.
We've answered none of the questions.
Didn't introduce ourselves. Yeah. But that's all coming in part two. And that's why you should watch, listen. Thank you. If you can, subscribe. I'd really appreciate it. Helps grow the pod. And yeah, join us for part two where we'll answer your questions and introduce ourselves. Cheers for watching.